Catholics are a jazz ensemble from Sydney who are coming to Armidale on Saturday, May 21 to perform at the New England Regional Art Museum. I'm pleased to have the leader of the Catholics band, Lloyd Swanton, on the phone. Good day to you, Lloyd, and thank you very much for taking our calls and being part of 2ARM Community Radio for today.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Peter. I appreciate it.
Now, could you tell us a bit about the Catholics as a jazz band and the style of jazz music that you play and people can expect to see when you come to Armidale on the 21st of May?
Yes, sure. The first thing to say is people might ask about the name. And we always spell Catholic with a lowercase c, and what I wanted to be referencing by that was to point out the use of the word Catholic meaning universal. And this is a band that is definitely a jazz band, but it's very open to influences from all around the world, particularly various dance rhythms. And as a jazz musician of many decades standing, when I formed the Catholics, I really wanted to bring some of those influences back into jazz, particularly music of the Caribbean and Latin America, Africa, the Middle East and Asia, to try to respectfully incorporate those traditions into a jazz ensemble.
And you've been going for 30 years now. Has that mm-hmm. been a time of evolution and revolution for you?
Yes and no. Excuse me. In one way, I think I hit on the formula from the outset, and all we've done is basically keep mining that particular vein. But you could also say that it's evolved enormously in that we've had quite a few personnel changes. It's not that it's particularly unstable or anything. You know, we're talking 30 years.
Yeah.
People come and go, and we've always ended on good terms. But over the years, I've had, you know, slide guitarists, I've had accordion players, I've had vibraphone players, and various combinations. It's usually been a seven-piece with two horns and five rhythm, but within that, yeah, there's been quite a lot of evolution over the years, but we're still basically, I think, loyal to our original concept, which is strong jazz blowing over really catchy, danceable grooves. I'm not sure about the venue we're playing in Armidale, whether there's the opportunity for people to get up and move around, but we certainly encourage people to move to our music if it's not going to upset the other patrons.
Yes, well, Mr. Ott played there recently, and the same thing was asked, and yes, there was plenty mm-hmm. of room for people to get up.
Oh, good.
Yes,
good.
As long as it's not stacked to the gunnels with people sitting down.
Yeah, and then we also like to feel that for people that don't want to dance and actually want some kind of intellectual stimulation, it's not just a mindless party band. You know, there's definitely some real thought-provoking interactions going on stage. So if you want to sit and listen, that's also just as welcome.
Yeah. Now, you've had a very long and distinguished career in Australian music and the Australian jazz scene. Where did this all start for you, and what were your influences in the early days that really directed you to going into the jazz area?
Look, it's really been so gradual, it's hard to say. I mean, quite frankly, when I was sort of maybe 16 or 17 and getting really enthused by music, I was probably, I'd always been really in love with the classic pop music of the 60s and 70s, and I still have that love for that era today. I think that's some of the finest songs ever written. And I was playing pop and the sort of precursor of heavy metal, you know, bands like Deep Purple and Led Zeppelin. But I had this perception that in jazz, the bass got a little more share of the limelight. And, of course, being a 16, 17-year-old boy, I wanted anything that could put my head above the rest of the pack. And I was very attracted to that. Ironically, soon after, I started forming some philosophies of music which are much more about group interaction, and in fact possibly the most successful group I've been involved in my career is the Next, which is really about three musicians not soloing at all and no one taking the foreground. That's sort of what got me into jazz initially, was getting a piece of the action on the bass.
And what were some of the bands? Like, I know Bernie McGann is someone who mm-hmm. you've played quite extensively with, and he was one of the exponents of jazz in the very early stages in the 60s and 70s in Sydney. Was he part of that evolution for you?
Oh, absolutely. It was an amazing learning experience. I mean, Bernie was a generation above me, probably 20 years older. We had a gig in Sydney in the early 80s at Jenny's Wine Bar. I think we did Thursday and Friday nights for several years, and that was such a university for me to learn, particularly the bebop tradition and Bernie's unique take on the bebop tradition, because he wasn't just a straight-out bebopper. And simultaneous to that, I was in an ensemble with my own contemporaries called Benders, which was borrowing quite a lot from the energy of rock music, and we were taking our music into a lot of customarily rock and punk venues and playing there and getting a great response. And we did three albums and toured internationally, and that really kicked things along for my career. So they were probably the two main involvements at the time.
But you didn't just stop there in the 80s. You did spread your wings a bit and went into the mainstream pop rock scene with bands like the Dynamic Hypnotics. What was that experience like when you look at your jazz background as it developed to that stage?
Oh, look, I loved the playing with the Dynamic Hypnotics. I started out on bass guitar before I took up the double bass. So with the Hypnos, I got back to playing bass guitar. Such incredible musicians in that band. Anyway, we had sax players like Craig Walters and Mark Simmons and Miroslav Bukowski on the trumpet. At the time that I was in it, we had a wonderful drummer, Duncan Archibald, who was also a very good jazz drummer. And Dave Brewer on guitar is just one of the best guitarist in Australia, just a magnificent blues player, and in fact he was a founding member of the Catholic, and I would say his approach to the instrument was a big part of what I had in mind initially when I formed the Catholic. So it was a wonderful experience. In fact, I only left because I was offered a tour to Mexico, and I decided to stay on and travel afterwards, so I handed in my resignation, but it was a very happy time.
And also, you've been involved with a range of other musicians such as Vince Jones, Wendy Matthews, Stephen Cummings, all great musicians in their own right, and incredibly experienced, and have persisted through the industry because they're so talented. How's that experience been in being able to adapt to their styles?
Well, I guess I'm coming from a point of view of creative freelance musician, and those two things don't always work in tandem, particularly like in the art scene. A lot of people, a lot of very creative artists, simply do their own thing. And likewise, I think in literature, you basically sit at home and you write books, and hopefully one becomes successful. And same with artists. With music, it's a little bit different, and you'll get freelance musicians who are really absolutely just jobbing musicians. You know, they're incredibly capable, but they basically just do the job required of them, and whatever that might be. And then on the other hand, you've got the creative musicians who don't necessarily really adapt to anything else. But there are some of us who try to walk that line between creativity and freelance flexibility, I guess. And I guess I've tried to build a reputation as a freelance creative professional, and have enough of a skill set that I can adapt to various situations. But you always end up with certain priorities, and the Catholics is of course one of mine.
And also, I would assume the Necks would be, because they were your first really big jazz band in terms of the style of music that made you quite well known. And I think that started in 1987, is that right?
Yes, and ironically, this wouldn't be the first time I've said this, but on paper it's probably the least commercial prospect of anything I've been involved in.
Yeah.
And yet it's been the most successful. When we started out, it was with the pure intention of just playing together in private. We had no plans to workshop it and launch ourselves on the public. And not long after the band started, our drummer Tony Buck moved overseas, where he's lived ever since, which should be the death knell for an ensemble. But then he started getting some really good contacts in Europe, where he ended up living, and said, why don't you come over and do a tour and see how it goes? And we didn't even know if the Europeans would even like what we did. And it actually took off incredibly strongly about the same time that things had been going really well for the Catholics. But I had to basically look at it and make a rational decision and say to myself, well, here's a three-piece band that travels incredibly lightly on its feet, that has great offers in Europe and then later on North America, or a seven-piece band, which I dearly love, for which I do all the work myself. I'm the leader. You know, the Necks was a cooperative. You know, we could make the big time with the Catholics, but it's going to take 20 years of hard slog. So I reoriented towards the Necks because it seemed like the best way forward for my personal advancement, but also made a resolution to devote as much time as I possibly could to keeping the Catholics as a living entity. And So whenever I've been back in Australia, I've always tried to generate concerts and recordings for the Cassocks and keep it moving, and it's been absolutely wonderful.
And it's obviously worked well because they're both still going after all this time. Mm-hmm. So just purely and simply being adaptable and adjustable and making the most of the time when you do have to do one or the other. Is that correct?
I think so. You know, like, we're all still talking to each other, which is which is really important.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm more impressed by people that can do that than madly passionate people who crash and burn and fail to make much of a mark in the end because they got way too tangled up in their passions and couldn't see the big picture.
Yeah, so he's very right there. Just on the next, before we go on back to the Cassocks, that style of music, what's made it so successful? Because I've read ecstatic reviews from all over the world about how do you think you've been able to achieve that?
Look, I think what it was about was a clear decision from the outset to be in the moment. And so I guess in a way the performance is the improvisation. It's people can come along and they can see the functioning of the machine in front of them. They can see all the bits on display. They can see us when we make a decision to do this or that. I guess the next is a band where we've gotten into investigating the very fundamentals of sound production. And I like to say that, you know, we can play a C major triad in the next, which is something that has been played 10 zillion times before, but somehow we can find something different in it. You know, we're really looking at C, E, and G and finding how those notes relate to each other and whether we can find something different. And so often we start to generate big waves of sound that the musicians don't even know where some of the sounds are coming from. It's, you start to get these effects of things bouncing around the walls and everything, and we incorporate all that. But in fact, our pianist Chris Abrams put it very well. He said, it's funny how sometimes you start to generate a texture and you feel very pleased with yourself that you've generated this amazing texture that's sort of triggering the other two guys, and then you stop playing for a while and the texture keeps going and you realise it was never you in the first place.
Well, something must be working because I've been looking up and noticed the next listed as number 49 in Rolling Stone, Australia's 50th greatest Australian artist of all time.
And
that's no mean achievement.
No, we were very chuffed with that, yeah.
Now, going back to the Cassocks, when you're working with, is it basically just to entertain and really get a good feeling going with each of the performances that you do?
Yes, there's definitely an entertainment aspect to it. We want people to be happy. We want it to be fun. But as I was saying earlier, it's not just a mindless party band. We like to think that there's some deeper levels that people can tap into. But I think it's just the joy of seeing seven musicians on stage creatively interacting with each other. And obviously this won't be possible with our single performance in Armidale, but I can assure you that if you saw us again a week later, even if we played the same tunes, we'd come up with some different ideas. And I think, so it's a little bit like what we do with the Next in a slightly more structured environment. We take these tunes and every time we play them, we ask ourselves, what can we do with this to see what it can offer to the audience?
Coming to Armidale, the Cassocks, a seven-piece band, who are the members and what are the instruments they play?
Well, the other two founding members, along with myself, are our horn players, the wonderful Sandy Evans on tenor and soprano saxophones, and the equally wonderful James Greening, who started out in the band on trombone but has since added pocket trumpet to the repertoire and sometimes also plays slide trumpet, which is essentially a very small trombone. And then in the rhythm section, we've got the wonderful Hamish Stewart on the drums, who is well known for playing with so many big names around Australia. Fabian Evier on percussion, who's our long-standing percussionist and wonderful player. The most recent new member is Gary Daly, who will be playing piano, accordion and melodica, and that has to be heard to be believed. And then recently our longtime guitarist John Peace left the group, and we haven't actually settled on a permanent replacement yet, but we're absolutely delighted that on these two dates we're going to be bringing Carl Dewhurst with us, who is simply one of the best players in Australia, and he's going to be really something worth hearing.
Well, sounds like a performance not to be missed. The next big thing, too, I believe, is you're going to be part of the big Orange Winter Jazz Festival coming up on the June long weekend.
Yes, I know that's not quite in the neighbourhood for your Armidale audience, but hopefully someone might be on the road.
We are known to travel around here.
I'm very excited about that. That's the first time. I live in the Blue Mountains myself, and I've discovered Western New South Wales over the last 10 or so years, and I really like the feeling out there. And I also think I have a personal connection in that my parents had their honeymoon in Orange in June in 1950, and it snowed the whole time. And it was obviously a story passed down in the family. But I think there's the potential for this Orange Winter Jazz to be the only jazz festival in Australia where it snows. And that would be a really great feature of it every year. So, and on that one, I'm very excited to have the young up-and-coming guitarist Hilary Geddes is doing her debut performance with us. We're going to be playing in the Anglican Church in Orange, and no jokes about the band name will be entered into, of course. And being that it's a church with the acoustics, we're going to go for a more atmospheric set. And I haven't yet played with Hilary, but I've seen her play, and one thing I think is fantastic is the sort of atmospheric textures that she generates. So I think she'll really step up to the plate, as the Americans say.
I just want to ask you about the double bass, because it, as an instrument, it was almost written off when the electric bass guitar came out and everything was electrified. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to be making a real return. I saw the Living End recently playing up at the Blues Fest at Byron Bay, and there was there for everyone to display. It was a double bass played through the whole performance as a real rock and roll instrument. Is it something that you believe well and truly part of the music bands of the future?
I think so. I think it's back and it's here to stay this time. It was interesting that you talk about the way the bass guitar had almost completely replaced the double bass, and that was very fortuitous for me that when I first came into the music scene playing double bass, mainly because we had two of them in my family growing up, there were some very good double bass players around, but not many of them, and a lot of them were quite a bit older. And so for a youngster to come along that could, you know, I could find my way around the bass. I certainly wasn't a fully formed talent. I tell you, there was a long way to go, but at least I could kind of hold it down and account for myself. That was quite a novelty. There were only a few of us around at the time. And so it was a really good time to be getting back into the double bass just when everyone was rediscovering the instrument. So I was able to ride that wave. And since then, as you say, it's become re-established. A lot of that's to do with improvements in amplification. You know, and they're two separate instruments. I love bass guitar and I love the double bass. And there is a certain amount of crossover, but to some extent they actually fulfill different roles now. And it's just, all we've done is enrich the music by offering more options.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And thank you very much, Lloyd, for making yourself available for today. And I wish you all the best for Bellingen on Friday and Armidale here on Saturday the 21st and also the Orange Festival.
Thank you so much.
I've been speaking to Lloyd Swanton. Lloyd is the leader of the Catholics, who are an Australian jazz ensemble who will be playing at NIRAM on May 21 at 3:30 on the afternoon. And I'll give you ticket details later.